Hello and welcome to our Tech Accelerator podcast. I'm Tech Target Editor at Large, Sandra Gitlin, and I'm excited to have with me today David Maldo, founder and CEO of Let's Do Video, which focuses on visual collaboration industry. David is our go-to expert on all things video conferencing. Over the past year plus, organizations have turned to video conferencing as a lifeline. Now, as the vaccinated population grows and employees make their way back into offices, IT has the difficult job of managing a hybrid workforce. We are going to discuss this as well as how video conferencing has met the challenge of this pandemic. Welcome, David.
Hi, Sandra. Thanks for having me.
Let's start out with a level set on what we mean by video conferencing nowadays. It often gets confused with team collaboration platforms and other such systems. Can you define video conferencing in this new era?
Oh, that's historically been a problem for video conferencing. We've been suffering with definition problems and branding problems for decades now. I mean, we can't even agree on the name. Video conferencing, one word or two.
Right?
Some people say two words.
I know we suffer from that, yes.
Yeah, it's hard to be consistent even within my own website. I have some articles I do one way and some I do the other way, depending on what I've recently read. And you know, it leads to confusion. And that's sort of a minor issue, but it's symbolic of the confusion within the industry. Some people have said, and I've agreed for a long time, video conferencing is something that we were selling as a product when it was actually a feature. Mm-hmm. If video conferencing is part of our meeting rooms, or it's part of our desktop solutions, it's part of our collaboration suites, but it was so hard to get right. Video conferencing is not easy. That video conferencing was its own little silo. You'd have to buy video conferencing. And that didn't make sense to people. Why would I buy video conferencing? For what? Just because it's cool?
Right.
So it was really confusing for a long time. What is video conferencing? How do we sell it? What do we need it for? Now, after the pandemic, video conferencing is how we communicate. Now it's just video. Now it's gotten simpler. I'm trying to say video instead of video conferencing, and it's the new telephone. Mm-hmm. If I can't be with you in person, I'm on video with you. So how we define it now, it's still confusing either whether it's a product, a service, a feature, but it's simple as to...
Or even a utility at this point, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like the phone system.
Yeah.
You get your Microsoft Teams account, your Zoom account, whatever it is, and it's a service. You pay a few dollars a month. But it also feels like a utility because it almost feels like infrastructure. It's part of how we live. Like I need the road to get to the grocery store and I need my video conferencing to work with my team. So I guess the good thing is, the question is, how can we define it? And the answer is, we don't really need to define it anymore. It's what we're all doing. Everyone knows
it. Ubiquitous, yeah.
Exactly.
Do you think, so the lockdown happened incredibly fast, leaving companies with large in-room systems gathering dust and a need for those capabilities to quickly spin up from remote locations. Do you think enterprises rose to this challenge well? And do you think vendors were able to support them at this?
Two questions there. Let's deal with the enterprises first. And I do think the enterprises rose to the challenge well, but I want to be specific. Usually we give credit to leadership, and leadership deserves credit. When a new executive team comes into a company that's losing money, and then 2 years later, they're making a lot of money. All right, you have some rock stars on your executive team, and they rallied the troops and everyone did it. But if it's a company with 40,000 people, I think some other people did some things right too. I don't think it's just the leadership. And in this particular case, I think the leadership was stuck. What could they do? You know, they can't say don't work remotely. They couldn't say don't use video. They had to say, okay, you know, you guys have been asking for this anyway. Workers have been asking, can we work from home anyway? Okay, do it. And yes, they led well. They did the right thing. They deserve credit. But who really rose to the challenge were the workers. Because the workers, they could have said, oh my God, this is so depressing. This pandemic is terrifying. I'm stuck at home. I don't know if I'm going to have a job next week. I'm depressed. You know what? My boss isn't watching me today. I'm just going to play video games.
Yep.
I'm going to watch old movies and sit on the couch. I'm not working. And that's not what happened. That really could have happened. But what happened is the worker said, you want to see me be productive at home? I'll show you how I can be productive at home. And they knocked it out of the park to the point where the bosses said, okay, you know what? When the pandemic's over, if you like working at home, I don't mind you being twice as productive and making me more money. It became a no-brainer to the point where we won the battle so much. The battle used to be, can we work part-time at home? When we're talking about, okay, we're going back to the office, even people were like, we have to go back to the office. They're saying 3 or 4 days a week.
Yep.
Very few are saying 5 days a week, it's going back to the way it was. I need to see your butt in the chair for 40 hours. Otherwise, I don't trust that you're working. We know, and it depends on the work. If you're working with a team that's working on a project together, yeah, you should be in the office. You need to be in the same room with them to really get stuff done. If they can't, video is the next best thing. But if you're writing all day, I'm not going to get in the car and commute for an hour and a half to sit at a computer that might not even be as good as the one that I have at home.
Or at a shared space where you can't think straight. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shared space where everything's not set the way I want it to be set. You know, it's not my favorite flavor of coffee that I have at home.
Right.
Let me sit at home. I'll write twice as much. So enterprises rose to the challenge. And by that, I really mean the workers who proved what we've been saying for so long, that people can be productive at home and have better lives. The second question is whether the vendors supported their needs. And that really shocked me how well they did it. And you can't even single one of them out. They all did it, all of them. And what's amazing about this, if you think about the way video conferencing works, you know, we're in a Zoom call right now, but the internet isn't connecting me directly to you. The internet's connecting me to a Zoom server and connecting you to a Zoom server. Everything goes to the Zoom server. And if it was Microsoft Teams, it'd be the same way. If it was BlueJeans, it'd be the same way. If it was Pexip, it'd be the same way. They have the servers. That's just the way video conferencing works. So when they started having 30 times or 100 times or whatever it was, more calls a day, you would think, oh my God, they had to ramp up 100 times more servers. It wasn't just turning a switch on something. They needed to get hardware. And I don't know whether they had it in reserve and they were ready for it or they were able to get it quickly, but however they did it.
Yes.
What I was expecting was when the pandemic hit, I was like, oh, this is going to be bad because I'm going to be seeing tweets about, I'm on my Microsoft Teams call and it just dropped. I'm on my Zoom call and the audio cut out because there's no bandwidth. You know, I thought the servers wouldn't be able to handle the load. I don't know what they did, but they did it.
It was magic. No, just kidding.
it felt like that. Yeah. All of a sudden, everyone's on and there are no bad calls. And that's never happened before. When anything ramped up, when Facebook first got big and everyone was on Facebook, Facebook had issues at first, right? You know, when anything gets too big too quickly, Twitter, anything gets too big too quickly, we're having server issues. We weren't prepared for this growth. And the video conferencing industry, all of them, they were like, we gotcha.
Can we talk about the price tag on the move to remote and then how that will boomerang back when people come back to the office? You know, what do you think IT teams should be expecting in terms of investments? You know, I'm tacking on a bunch of questions because I think they all go together. Will they walk away from in-room systems and huddle rooms and all that stuff that they invested in favor of more portable systems that go with the user? I guess, and then that thought process of you have these people coming back into the office that are now used to working a certain way. So how does all that combine to let these teams gather naturally in the office with what they're used to now versus the investments that were made prior to the pandemic?
That's a great question. And it's something that the video conferencing industry is trying to solve in a number of ways now. We've figured out the remote part. And we figured out from the video conferencing industry point perspective, it's very easy. People who had never made a video call before this year are all now video experts. And it wasn't that hard for them. Someone sent them a link and they said, what do I do with this link? And they said, click it and you'll be in the meeting. Yeah. They clicked it. They were in the meeting and it worked. And, but what's more important is everyone's gotten good at it over the last year. When I would be in a Zoom call, a Teams call, when the pandemic started, there'd be two people who look the way, you know, you're seeing me on now. I'm framed like a TV newscaster.
Yep.
One of my lights blew out, so I'm having lighting issues. I need makeup, all that kind of stuff. But I'm framed the right size. I'm in the middle of the screen. I have good eye contact. It's set up right. Everyone looks like this now. It's amazing to me. I'm in calls, there'll be 30 people and everyone looks like a TV news broadcaster.
Everyone looks great. The light ring.
Everyone has a light ring and everyone figured out how where to put the camera. A year ago, we had the up the nose. We had the forehead. We had the half the face. No one, everyone looked like a hot mess on video. Now everyone remotely has their little home studios, or at least they've had things set up. They figured out if, you know, God forbid they're still on an iPhone. iPhone's great if you're at the coffee shop, but if you're at home, come on, get it right. But even if they're on an iPhone, they figured out how to hold it so they don't look ridiculous. And now the people in the meeting rooms at the office, which is what this question is about, well, they want to look good too. And it's really hard to do. If you have, especially with social distancing now, if you have an 8-person meeting room and you have 3 people sitting at it as far away from each other as possible, how do you capture that on a camera and make them as look good as we do in a Zoom meeting now from home? So we have cameras that'll zoom and pan and figure out who's talking and try to frame on the person who's talking. Some people go with that approach. We have cameras that like break up into 3 different views and make them into 3 separate windows. There's all sorts of different things. We have cameras that will warp them and make it look like they're sitting next to each other. Kind of bring them together. I don't know what the right answer is, but I know that the industry is being creative and smart and innovative, all stuff I love, trying to figure this out, because we have to figure out, because the answer isn't going to be less video. You know, okay, we're going back to the office. We don't do video as much. The answer is going to be more video. Because like we discussed in the previous question, even the people who are saying go back to the office aren't saying 5 days a week.
Right.
So whatever day your team is meeting, 2 or 3 people from the team aren't there. And they're not going to want to call in on audio, assuming you don't burn them out. Some people, as we've discussed in other, and I think we're going to get burnt out and have too much. But if they really want to be an effective part of the meeting, you find that when you're on audio, like you're the last person that gets called on. And sometimes you're like, hey, can I wanted to, oh, I had a thought on, never mind.
Oh my God, the Polycom days of yore.
Yes.
Where everybody was on the Polycom and you couldn't tell who needed to speak.
And so if half of them are on video and half are on audio, you kind of feel left out. So you definitely, the people that are working from home, for the most part, for the meetings that are done well, are going to want to be on video. So we're going to have video, not just in the video meeting room like we used to have. We're going to have to try to do what we, before the pandemic, we had this whole huddle room buzz. It was just starting to happen. And the idea was get video out of the meeting room and into the places where we're working.
Right.
And we're starting to do that. And now we need to really follow up on it. We can't call them huddle rooms anymore. The branding's got to change on that. I'm not, I'm vaccinated, but I'm still not huddling with anyone. I'm never shaking hands again. I can't believe it's like this whole thing's affected me. Shaking hands is gross. I can't believe we ever did it.
So much. Shared spaces sometimes, I think that changes that whole view somewhat as well.
We definitely have a different feeling towards it. I like the idea of there being a chair between me and the next person in the in the room now. I'm not saying everyone's like me, but I know I'm not the only one. So we need to figure out.
Yeah, it seems like, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but what you're saying then is kind of we're taking more of the lessons of the remote experience versus the in-room systems that were already there. Like that there's going to be a renaissance of sorts.
Yeah, it's flipped, because it used to be that the people in the meeting room looked great. They're all sitting at the conference table and they got the $10,000 camera pointed at them and it's set up so it's perfectly on them. So they look like the news broadcasters, and the people at home look terrible because we didn't have good webcams yet. They hadn't invented them yet, or were on weird angles on phones and stuff. And now it's the opposite. The people who've been doing this for a year from home and figured out how to look good. And the meeting rooms were realizing we need to figure this out, because every meeting is going to be a video meeting. Yeah. It's going to be way more than it used to be. It used to be, some meetings were video meetings. Every meeting's a video meeting, because there's always going to be someone who's not there.
I want to switch things up and just ask about compliance regulations, because I think that it's an important topic that maybe people have let slide during the pandemic because they weren't sure what was going to happen maybe, but they've been a challenge for some organizations when it comes to securing, capturing, storing, archiving, and then making video available for audit in industries that require this. Can you talk a little bit about this, I guess, conundrum and what you're seeing as unique solutions for it?
Yeah, this is interesting. I've always, it's funny, these solutions have always been a big part of the market and kind of a quiet part of the market. If you go to the big trade shows, you go to Enterprise Connect or Infocom or one of those, everyone's at the booth with the new 3D displays. Yep. Or the, you know, the Zoom booth or the Cisco booth or the Microsoft booth with the big flashy stuff and the new, you know, whatever their big new announcements are, the sexy fun stuff. But there's always these booths by these companies that have these capture storage devices and networking solutions for content management. And you go to their booths and all they have to show you are these server boxes, right. You know, computer boxes. And they're really excited about what they do and they talk about it's really important, but you want a flashy demo and they're like, well, you know, it's got 6 ports in the back. so I don't do a good job of covering them. I don't think anyone does a great job of covering them because anyone writing about the market or making videos wants to get views into the sexy stuff. But what I recently realized, someone was sharing a report with me, which I'm not at liberty to give the stats, the exact numbers from it, but they were showing the segments of the market and that portion of our industry is much bigger than I thought it was, like billions and billions of dollars more than I thought it was. It's a big, they had this chart had these circles showing, you know, what percentage is conferencing and what percentage is streaming and what percentage is whatever the different market segments were. And the market segment for this was massive. And I was shocked by it because I don't think a lot about it. But that got me thinking about it and made me realize that, well, first of all, it's a great question for you to ask. It should be on our radar. It is important now more than ever, because if every meeting is a video meeting and we're recording them, we have to deal with that.
Yep.
And there are so many issues. First is just, it's just video files are massive. They're just so big. I try to clean out my computer every once in a while and all I really focus on is go to that video folder and see if there's anything I can delete because that's all the space. But there's also security issues.
Yep.
I mean, it's very easy just to put everything on YouTube. Yep. You could have as much space as you want. I've never heard of anyone saying YouTube has limited my uploads.
Right.
But companies aren't doing that, obviously, because of security. So yeah, you have to get... you have to look into it. You have to research it. You have to learn about the companies that we thought were boring, but are actually doing this stuff. And what they're doing is, and I have been through some demos, and maybe I should give them some more credit because they are trying to be a little fun and sexy with it. They're making it look like YouTube for business.
Someone who covered the routers and switches market for a very long time, I can tell you how hard it is to make a router or a switch look sexy. In fact, one company resorted to purple boxes, changing the color of their boxes to make them stand out. So, you know, there you go.
It really is that hard. From the perspective of the product, it's always just going to be a box. But what they're trying to do is try to make it look like YouTube for business.
Yep.
So instead of like emailing the video to the person who, you know, is in charge of it, or using some weird interface that looks like a techie interface to you know, instead of looking like a file server, that's what they used to look like, file share file servers. It looks like YouTube, kind of looks like YouTube, except it's a secret private YouTube that you can't get into unless you work at the company.
Yeah.
And uploading videos works like the way YouTube works, and sharing videos works like the way YouTube works. So I think they're doing it right. And I think they deserve a lot more credit and we should be paying more attention to them.
One thing I would say to that as well is I think where they fall down sometimes is educating the users on what their compliance constraints are. You know, so I think that some of the problems could be solved just if they communicated to users what is a video that needs to be considered as something to watch out for, you know, that might be needed later versus, hey, we're just chatting, you know, so... and even just a chat sometimes, depending what your role is and the other person's role is, you know, might need to be compliant as well. So, yeah, I think I think in putting it in the user, the user agreement, you know, the user policies, perhaps.
Yeah, I think a lot of it might be, and that's something I think we barely touched started to do the tip of the iceberg with, is policies around recording.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll be briefing with a company and they'll say, oh, hey, is it okay if I record this? And I never say, where's the recording going?
Right.
And I say, yeah, because I don't care. You know, right. I'm always like, I always assume I'm on a broadcast of the universe. Anything I'm saying, anyone in the world can be hearing. You know, just this, it's a safe way to be.
Yep.
But I should be saying, what is this being recorded for? And where's the recording going? Who's going to see it? How is it going to be maintained?
Yeah.
I don't ask any of those things. And maybe we should. And maybe policy should be made that, you know, the weekly team meetings are all recorded and available to these people by, that can access it this way. And these meetings are not recorded. You know, if it's a quick Zoom call with the team leader, say, hey, I just want to know, is the office going to be open on Friday? Is that recorded?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So making kind of the same way we do with data storage, you know, maybe start thinking about it in that way, you know, going forward. Zoom fatigue, and I'm not even call it Zoom fatigue anymore, just fatigue. Okay. Video fatigue. I know I have turned off my camera more and more lately, you know, just due to fatigue, but, how are companies dealing with this? You and I have talked about this before, and I've heard you say that, that they're beginning to be more selective and put out more policies or suggestions around what makes a video conference.
Yeah. I think, it's what we used to call meeting fatigue before the pandemic. We called it meeting fatigue. There's a Twitter account called Meeting Boy. And now he talks about Zoom meetings, you know, video meetings, but he used to talk about in-person meetings when you're sitting in that meeting and your boss is talking about someone else's project that you have no input in, that you're not allowed to have input in, and you're sitting there waiting for your turn. And meanwhile, you're stressed out because there's work you need to be doing. That's meeting fatigue.
Yep.
Or you know, all the old tropes, the boss is telling stories or trying to tell jokes or just being annoying or just taking 45 minutes for what should be a 5-minute status meeting. All of those things are leadership problems, team problems, communication problems, meeting problems. And when we switched from meeting in the meeting room to meeting in video, we took all those problems with us and now we're calling them video problems. And we just need to watch that. I went through it with my team. When I have a remote team, before the pandemic, we started this company remote. And I was very conscious of that. And I was very worried that it would feel like not a real company. I think a lot of the same fears that people have with the pandemic. Do I still have a job? Is this real? Or is it just, you know, some guy who calls me on the phone, you know, to say, let's do a project together. Is this a real thing? And I wanted to feel like a real company. So I had a policy of a daily video meeting and whether we needed it or not. And it was bad.
Yep.
Everyone had meeting fatigue.
Yeah.
And we did it over video. So maybe they would have thought it was video fatigue. It wasn't video fatigue. It was David fatigue. It was me. They were sick of me. They didn't need that. They love me. They didn't need me that much. They didn't need me every day. So getting that right solves the problem of video fatigue. And I'm really concerned about it becoming, you know, people not wanting to do video because they think it's video fatigue when it's actual meeting fatigue. I heard recently, a friend of my father at a retirement community, they were doing all the association, you know, retirement association community meetings over Zoom. And now that they're all vaccinated, they're doing them in person. And I'm like, oh, but you're still having a camera in the room for people who can't make it. And they're like, no, they're sick of it. And I'm like, but aren't there two or three people who have hip surgery or just got this? They're like, oh yeah, there's always two or three people who can't make it, but too bad for them. I'm like, no, that's terrible.
But I agree with you. I do think that's a good way to put it. And I do think that when people try it hybrid, it's going to be even more evident because if you're not in the room and somebody's drawing it out with a joke or something, you know, like they're doing that in-person meeting thing, right? Then I think it'll become even more evident when somebody's outside of the room and they just don't get, you're just going to have to navigate that, I think. What about, I'm switching questions on you here. Um, who who now leads video conferencing efforts in organizations? Has that role migrated to other teams as the profile has grown? Do you see it requires other skill sets since it's dealing with remote folks as well? And my last part of that is it more of a multi-function team now, say security, IT, and I, you know, name who else would be involved?
It's funny, that question is a question within a question, because before we could answer the real question, which is your question, which is who leads video conferencing efforts, we have to address that video conferencing efforts have completely changed from what they were pre-pandemic. Video conferencing efforts used to be adoption. That's mm-hmm. all we cared about. Get people to use video. I wrote white papers on adoption. I gave webinars on adoption. I did consulting with companies about adoption because they couldn't get people to use video. It's like people had video, it wasn't video fatigue because they didn't have it. It was video fear or video phobia or something. And we did these studies that said your teams are more productive if they use video. Not more productive than meeting in person, but you know, there's always some people that can't be there. And rather than just have them not participate or participate over the phone, when they use video, the whole team was more productive. We'd have companies that say we have 32 teams and two of them are using video and they're leading. And the other 30 were like, use video. And they're like, okay, but they don't. How do we get them to use video? And that was what a video conferencing effort was. And it was hard. We'd have to get champions. We'd have to get someone inside the team that we like meet with secretly and say, you got to act like video conferencing is your favorite thing in the world and get the whole team to use it. We would have contests. Whoever had the most minutes of video conferencing wins the thing. It was crazy trying to get people to use video conferencing because, well, culturally we weren't there yet. Mm-hmm. And also it was harder then. This is before we had just send a link to your desktop. This is meeting room video conferencing where someone has to know how to use a remote control. Or you have to call the IT team to come and make the call for you. So it was really hard. And now we don't have an adoption issue. Now everyone's using it. They realize some people are burnt out and are starting to show. I want to go back to the Zoom fatigue. One of my fears really, really quickly, you know, you're so Zoom fatigued that you're not on video with me in this meeting because you've carried over being sitting in meetings where like I said, you know, you don't need to be there, that now you're just like, I don't feel like being on video. And I definitely feel like our meeting would be better. When I say something, I keep looking to see your reaction. I don't see your, I assume you're smiling at everything I say.
I am smiling a lot. So I'm sorry that you're missing that.
Right. But it's not your fault. It's meeting fatigue's fault and it's carried over. And there's a lot of people who are doing exactly what you're doing, who are meeting on, you know, who are taking a break from video. And it's because we really need to solve that issue. But going back to the question I was answering about who leads the effort. So what is the video conferencing effort? It's not adoption now. It's just enablement. Mm-hmm. Making sure that everyone has an account and making sure that it's in all the rooms. So I think it's largely an IT thing. You know, they manage those sorts of things and it's all over the network and the network is theirs. You know, a little bit, it's always going to be a little bit facilities because, and we haven't figured this out, but we have to figure out how we're going to do the hardware in the rooms. I think we're going to repurpose those huddle room kits and we're going to call them social distancing kits.
Yep.
Because they're honestly, they're perfect. They're right price. They were like $1,500, $2,000.
Oh, that'll be interesting if that happens. Yeah.
I kind of think it was the right solution before we had the problem. Yeah. The solution to coming back to the office is we need $2,000 Zoom rooms, Microsoft Teams rooms, BlueJeans rooms everywhere. And it's like, oh yeah, we have them. They're huddle rooms. No, they're not huddle rooms. They're you know. Yeah. They're not huddle rooms, but they're the right solution. They're affordable, kit-based, high-quality kits that work on the solutions that we use.
So do you think then, you know, the person leading the video is still IT? Sorry, the team still leading video conferencing is still IT. They just have to loop in. They have to be sure to loop in other teams as it's more high profile now?
Yeah, you know, definitely security is going to be, and you know, IT it always has to kind of loop in security with everything they do. So security is definitely going to be looped in whether they need to or not, but just because when the pandemic hit, security and video conferencing became a very hot issue. Mm-hmm. So it's on everyone's mind. So now it's a checklist item. And it's fine. We don't have time in this podcast, but the industry has responded to the security concerns, and I think we're fine now.
Yep.
But it's definitely, if I was an exec at a company and I was putting out 10,000 video conferencing accounts and setting up 300 rooms, I would say, I want my security team all over this. Just because I keep hearing about security and video conferencing, so make sure it's good. So yep. Security definitely has to be looked in.
I guess my last question is a lightning round, okay? What do you think has been the biggest surprise for you in terms of video conferencing of late?
Oh, okay. This is a good one. And you know, usually I'm very positive. I usually like to give positive answers. I'm going to give a positive and a negative answer because I have a negative answer, but I can't help myself. I have to go positive. My positive answer is how much everyone loves virtual backgrounds.
Yep.
I've always loved them. I have a lot of fun with them. I do a bunch of tricks. I have extra software so I can have moving backgrounds and all sorts of things. But I thought everyone was going to say, turn off your virtual background. It's a distraction. It's annoying. We hate it. And I was really concerned about the ones that don't use a green screen, that use software, mm-hmm. because they're not as good. You know, your hair gets cut off, your shoulder gets cut off. And I thought once I saw that, I'm like, oh, no one's going to accept that. They're going to say, David, your left ear keeps disappearing. Yeah. I can't talk to you. And you know what? Everyone loves it. Wow. Everyone's fine with it. And it became a positive thing. And I love this story. Teachers say that they were worried about going to virtual classrooms because some of their students might have a lot of nice toys in the background and some might not.
Yeah.
And it's just private. They might feel embarrassed either way and not want to share it. All the kids put on the virtual backgrounds. They didn't have to buy green screens. So that for me is the surprise feel good thing is that virtual backgrounds, which I thought was a silly thing that I liked, turned out to be an actually really important thing and something that not everyone, but a lot of people loved. Now to the negative side.
Okay.
We dropped the ball on virtual events. I thought virtual events were going to be amazing this year because everything that we did in person, we were going to do virtually. We were going to figure out how to make it so cool. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is the video worked for the virtual events. Everyone said we're using whatever, using WebEx, we're using Zoom, we're using MS Teams, we're using BlueJeans, and those video services knocked it out of the park. Every webinar, every meeting within these virtual events was good, but the platforms to support them were terrible. Right. These virtual event platforms, I was expecting to click to a website that has the virtual equivalent of my favorite trade show and some, I don't know. I'm not expecting like a little cartoon character walking down the virtual cartoon trade show because no one will, I would like that. I would be the only one who would like that. But something to make it feel like we're all there together, like it's a community. And it didn't feel like that. It felt like a bunch of webinars.
Yep. And like you just were stopped, you know, like you were just having emails with the folks, not an interactive experience. Yeah.
Yeah, the booths were all cheesy. I don't like the way the booths are presented at these platforms. None of them have a good flow to me.
Yeah.
And it just didn't have that sense of, and this can be done virtually. I've gone to virtual events where, are you going to be there? And then I see you at the virtual event and somehow I communicate with you and it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But none of the ones, you know, that's like in video games and stuff do that right.
Yeah.
In business, no one's got that right. All the virtual events this year, no, I'm exaggerating. A lot of virtual events this year were really disappointing. The content was great. The video was great. The wrapping around them was not great. They didn't get that sense. And I think it's possible to do it. And I hope someone gets it right because I think we're going to continue to need virtual events. I think ideally they should be hybrid.
And that can certainly carry over to things like HR onboarding or, you know, things that can be brought in-house, you know, so not so much an event atmosphere, but if they do it right in an event atmosphere, you can bring it back into the company to help people feel more part of the company as well. I think, you know, there's applications for it there.
Exactly. Yeah. Make a more, you know, a more human experience about it.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to doing this again with you soon. And
this was fun.
You've been listening to the Tech Accelerator podcast and have a wonderful day.